Golf Smarter number 175 for April 21, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The long-awaited return of Fred Shoemaker from Extraordinary Golf.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Day 26, and the airlines have yet to find or return my golf clubs. Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. To Nick, Matt, and every CPA, tax preparer, or anyone else involved in April 15 tax paperwork, welcome back. It's time to play some golf, and I'm sure you're ready. At the beginning of last week, just after the Masters, the Golf Smarter podcast was featured on the iTunes podcast homepage. So if you're a new listener and this is your introduction to Golf Smarter, welcome to the team. Golf Smarter is not just our name, it's a call to action. What you won't find here is PGA Tour news, but you will be exposed to a wide variety of conversation that will increase your enjoyment of the game. And as many have told me, we provide interesting and entertaining advice on how to successfully lower your scores. What a great time to join in on the conversation, too, because our featured guest first appeared on Golf Smarter back in April of 2006. And ever since, I've received more emails asking when Fred Shoemaker will come back more than any other guest. His two books, Extraordinary Golf, The Art of the Possible, and Extraordinary Putting, Transforming the Whole Game, are considered by some as must-reads for golfers of all skill levels. In a recent blog post in thejoyofgolfing.com, John Leland wrote this about Fred Shoemaker. He's an extraordinary human being and truly remarkable teacher, as well as an inspiring golfer. Truly, if the golf gods were going to grant me anyone's golf swing, it wouldn't be Tiger's swing that I would choose. It would be Fred's. Fred Shoemaker, not Fred Green. Fred started the Extraordinary Golf School in 1990 and has been honorably ranked in the top 25 golf schools by Golf Magazine. It's a great honor to have him back on the show because his busy travel schedule makes it very difficult to capture him in a stationary position. Now, just to let you know, Fred was in Carmel, California when we recorded this, and for some reason, the quality of the phone signal isn't what I'm accustomed to, nor are you, but I've cleaned it up as best as I can, and I hope you agree it's acceptable because the content is so rich. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Fred.
Oh, hello, Fred. Thank you for having me back here.
Oh, are you kidding? I've been hoping to have you back for such a long time and been receiving emails from all over the world saying, when is Fred Shoemaker coming back to talk about Extraordinary Golf?
Well, we'll make sure not to bum out those people who are sent those emails by this podcast.
Let me get right to it, Fred. You know, so often we hear about how the lessons that can be learned about life and about yourself can be found on the golf course. I've been reviewing again the book Extraordinary Putting, and you kind of drill that down some levels to make the observation that about putting, that you know, the things that you can really learn about yourself, about life, can be dropped down into the putting, not just the golf course itself, but on the putting green. Please.
Well, the operative word you said there is can. It doesn't necessarily mean that you will. I mean, this is an intentional act, intentional to look at who one is being through the act that you're doing, in this case, putting. On its own, it's probably not going to happen. That people say that golf teaches life lessons. No, it doesn't. It only does if you intend it to be, and whether you're willing to look. Well, it can teach you about your relationship to failure. Because most of the putts you hit don't go in. It can teach you about self-trust. It can teach you about creating an environment in which it's safe for you to learn or safe to explore things. You can learn about concentration while putting. You can learn about many different things. I mean, if you ever said, I want to learn about learning, well, just put a putter in your hand, start putting, and just begin to notice your relationship to exploring, trust, failure, you know, overcoming obstacles, it's all there. The beauty about putting is that it happens in such a small way. Anyone can do it. And the interesting part for me is that the way that you putt, the same way of being, you'll take into chipping, you'll take into your full swing, And if you want to express it a little wider, you're going to take it into what, how you are in business, and you'll take it into how you are in your family. It's still just you. And if you're willing to look at it, you can find out a lot about you.
And how do we peel that back and recognize that?
Well, first of all, to realize that the one of the purposes of a game, the truth is, Fred, your handicap's about what now?
About 11.
About 11. So the, in reality, if you happen to shoot 77 one day, or an 88 the next, or whatever in the same day, it's not going to matter a big deal in the world, really. Yeah. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay. So having a low score is not going to really do anything really valuable for you. It's not going to help your bank account. It won't help your relationships, really. There are a few people in the world who play it for a living. It might have some value for them.
Boy, you know, I'm going to stop you there and say it definitely has an impact on my relationships with the people I'm playing with that day.
Yes, right.
I'm playing well. It's like, okay, Fred, you can just walk in front of us for a while. We don't need you here right now.
Which is something to learn there, right?
Absolutely.
So if the point being that the purpose of a game may be to learn something that isn't in a game, isn't in the game, that's why games were invented. Games were invented to simulate life, such that you were much better in life when you got off the game. But we've raised games to a different level that the game itself is important. And we're hooked into it, as if it really mattered whether Vijay Singh is the first leading money winner or Tiger Woods is. Like, okay, that's maybe fine. But given that as the background and that golf really is important, we don't look for those other things. But if you can demiss it, so to speak, or demystify it, by saying, you know, what can I learn while playing the game that would make a difference for my life? Then you have some other opportunities. And, see, Fred, being good at golf isn't really going to do you any good. I mean, in real life. And I think people are hooked on the idea that it does. When you can see that, then you can make other choices, like saying, you know, I'd like to play today to see if I can learn about letting go and freedom. And have my body be de-stressed and at ease, such that I have more energy when I'm done than when I began. Be an interesting way to play golf. Or suppose a golf swing could be like having a massage, that every time you're done with a swing, your body feels much more comfortable than when you started. Be a nice way to play golf. Or you could learn about honoring your commitment. Let's say a commitment is to connect with a target and swing freely. And even if you mess up the first couple holes, to learn about honoring your commitment in a what might be called a critical situation, you know, in a time when you're not playing that well. So there's so much to be learned, but only if you see it as the, as something outside of the game may it be at least important as the game itself. Because if I live in the town of Carmel, and if all of Carmel got a low handicap, it wouldn't be any better town. And we think it would be, so sometimes you just have to poke at the number one myth that getting better is going to make people so much happier. It really doesn't. I'm sorry to say.
You've just disappointed a lot of people, but I think that they're going to keep listening because there's got to be more to it than that.
Well, I don't know if we talked about this in the last time, but I was supposed to talk at the Coaching and Teaching Summit a few years ago. I was the last person to talk. This is a 3-day connection of golf teachers. There are about 1,000 golf professionals. So I listened to this for 2.5 days. And when it became my turn to talk, it became obvious that the whole golf world revolves around one simple axis. And the axis is if people get better, they'll be happier. That's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in business, if people get more money, they'll be happier. Or that revolves around that, or more production. So when it became my turn to talk, I said, okay, I've been trained to challenge the basic assumption of any culture I'm in. Is it true or not? So I said to the folks, and there are 1,000 of them sitting in these stands, and I said, you have achieved what very few people you ever coach will achieve. You have gotten better. You have reached the epitome of what people are asking for. This is the largest group of low handicap players that will exist in the world this year. And I just have to ask you something. Are you really happy?
Well, I knew you were. It's perfect.
I know, that's rotten.
No.
I was like,
where can you be going with this? Obviously, are you happier because of it?
Not only that, are you satisfied? Do you get full of joy when you play? Can you hardly wait for the adventure? Do you love the being out with people and communing with nature, so to speak? And they just laugh, just like a 20 handicappers would laugh.
Right.
Because there is this thing that if I get better, it'll all turn out for me and the angels will sing. And it's just not true. Golf professionals are no more happier playing than a 20 handicap. As a matter of fact, many of them are much more afraid. They have to keep up their appearances to the members. They were better at one time and they're not playing so well, that sort of thing. So it's no different. If you can say, if getting better isn't it, then what is? And that question is a good one to start with. What is your purpose for playing? Why have you chosen to spend 4.5 hours wagging a piece of rubber in a park and chasing it? That fundamental question of what's your purpose, only you can answer. The purpose of golf is not set in a book. The rules are to score as low as possible. But what's your purpose? Why are you doing this? And most people simply adopt a cultural purpose which says, I got to get better. I got to improve. And when I do, then it'll all turn out.
Yeah, but nobody's satisfied ever.
Well,
I mean, there you are with a room of people who had, as you said, the lowest handicap congregation ever, and they still wanted to get better. They still wanted to achieve lower scores.
But suppose we take a look at what would allow for true satisfaction. I mean, I've given over 1,000 workshops now. And when you ask people in a golf school or a PGA workshop, what do you really want? I mean, really want? People seem to ask just for a few things. And I've written down, we have sheets in a closet I'm looking at. Of all those workshops, we take down as best as we can recreate what people are really asking for. And people are asking for peace of mind. They're asking for real freedom, the capacity to let it go and not be constrained by doubt and fear. And they're asking for the capacity to coach themselves in such a way that they can take over their own empowerment, so to speak, rather than having someone say, you know, Fred, you just came over the top and you were too quick. So if that's what people are really asking for, how can you create an environment that they can get that? But here's the kicker. The kicker is think, if I play better, I'll get peace of mind, I'll get freedom, and I'll be able to coach myself. And that's not proven to be true. Mm-hmm. So if you were to say, come to a golf program and say, I am here to develop a greater peace of mind or ease and grace in which I play.
Oh, I can imagine that they would look at you like a puppy hearing something for the first time.
Well, that's eventually, when you talk to them, when you really get down to it, people say that for themselves. You know, I really want just to not to play with a lot of fear. So worried about being embarrassed all the time. How much our desire for admiration of others hooks us into very weird behaviors. Yeah, and on we go.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I just kind of was stunned,
okay.
Stunned there for a second.
That's us.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you talk to these people and you say, you know, what are you trying to achieve? I guess in a group like that, they want their customers to know that they can help them achieve lower scores and maybe even create the illusion that that will make them happier.
Well, if a lot of, I'm not against lower scores. I think they're wonderful. But what else could come along with it?
But they think that that's going to result in, I mean, aren't, you're in the golf industry. I mean, and the goal here is to generate revenue.
Yes.
Bottom line. I mean, you know, it's it would be nice if everyone can hit the ball well and it would be an easy game. But if it was an easy game and everyone can hit the ball well, then the industry would suffer.
Well, hang on. I have a different way of viewing that.
Please.
I came back from the Peace Corps in 1982. And I decided to coach golf here in the Bay Area. So I went to a couple places and said, I got this idea about coaching golf. And they said, okay, we'll let you put up your lesson shingle here and start. So when I started, my intention was to empower people, enliven them, and enable them, not to foster dependencies. And I wasn't that interested in looking good, as best as I could tell. But it was always to empower people to learn how to coach themselves. So instead of the first ready-made answer, it was something about having people discover for themselves. It was about self-coaching. So in my first month at this one place, I probably got only 10 lessons. And the guy who owned the place felt sorry for me and sent his daughter to have a lesson. But after a while, I and the folks who were at the lesson really enjoyed having people learn how to coach themselves, empowering them because they were worthy of it. I mean, they really could begin to discover for themselves and feel for themselves and sense for themselves and to know where things are rather than having a coach always have to say things. And I found that after 3 months, my lesson book was full. When people say, if I could coach myself a solid hit, how about in curving the ball? And after a year of being there, there was a six-week waiting list. And this is not because I knew a lot of stuff. It's because of the nature of empowerment itself. People who feel, get a sense of what's possible for them, see a whole new range about what more is possible for them. And that's, I love that, actually.
I can see why you would.
Well, it's just the opposite. People say, oh, if people get to play coaching well, they won't come back. My experience is the opposite. They come back more.
That's fascinating. I was just going to say, you probably don't befriend many coaches.
Well,
or instructors.
Well, I have a lot of friends who are coaches and instructors.
But, I mean, you know, industry-wide, because something that I was told once in business, that the sign of a good consultant is someone who doesn't give the final answer to the client. Because once you've given the final answer, they're not going to need you anymore.
Well, and the next question is there a final answer, or is this an endless process of development? Wonderfully so. I mean, no one ever masters the sport. And see, and I know, and I've worked with so many PGA seminars. I like the folks in our profession. I think they're wonderful. But I know deep down they have one thing that they really want, and that's to make a difference for people. In the midst of wanting to make an income and wanting to look good, people are sincerely interested in the fact that their life has mattered for other people. And if they could find ways in which not only can people can develop their golf games, but they could find that people, suppose someone came to you and after a lesson said, you know, from a lesson with you, Fred, I got a different relationship with my daughter, and I learned how to listen more.
Hmm.
From having a lesson with you, I learned how to learn, and I took that back into my classroom. And I was teaching kids in such a way that altered the way that they learned, too. Or, from being with you, I learned about concentration and getting away from this crazy voice in my head all the time and learned how to be present more. And I just realized how much less stress my daily work life has. How about golf lessons that fulfilled that? That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
But it's possible. This is not pie-in-the-sky California talk.
Thank you.
Okay.
How is it? And we're heard globally. I want you to know that so people know what you're talking about. How is it that, or what would you advise, when looking for an instructor,
yes,
if they don't bring up the idea of coaching yourself, is that somebody you want to check off your list and go, maybe I need to come back? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody, myself, or someone listening, on how to find the right instructor for yourself?
It would be, I think, the first thing is the quality of their listening. See, my experience, what allows for real transformation is listening, not speaking. Really getting what a person wants, really. Really getting who they are. And then create, see, it's something like this. In the, let's say the first 5 minutes of a golf lesson. Are we okay to go into that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's one of my questions that I have written down is about your golf school. But go ahead and let's see where it goes from here.
Well, to me, in the first 5 minutes of a golf lesson, it's all done. It's like this. The first thing that starts out is the coach and the student have a conversation in which the student sees for himself or herself a new possibility that they maybe had not seen before. Something that turns them on and they get enough energy for action on. It's like someone coming to a coach and say, I want to stop my slice. Instead of the same coach saying, oh, take a few swings, partner, we'll see what we got. He might say, watch, listen to the words if you could. What do you think you ought to pay attention to in order to make a difference? And the students say, oh, I don't know. And they'll say, check it out. Of all your years of experience, where do you think we ought to start? And the student will usually say, well, it's my hands or something. And the coach could say, okay, how about if we started there? And the coach could say, if in this hour of being together, you not only get how to stop a slice, but you can create a hook also and coach yourself in both hooking and slicing and feel the difference, would that be valuable for you?
Invaluable.
Yeah. So, and then the last part would be, if I noticed, Fred, that during this hour that you started getting all mopey and poopy about not getting enough distance, do I have your permission to bring you back to our essential issue, which is about hooking and slicing and being able to coach yourself on that? Do I have your permission for that?
Hmm.
What would you say on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so here's how we start it. First, we have a student has created a commitment for themselves secondly, that they have a context for the what they would say a successful lesson, that they can coach themselves by the end of the time. Thirdly, they have a place to begin to start putting their attention or commitment. And fourthly, we've handled the first breakdown. Breakdown is simply when a person leaves their true intention and gets lost in the swirl of their thoughts. It ought to be better or different or something. If we have that in the first couple minutes, we got a chance here. We got a chance not only to make a difference, but to really have something wonderfully created that has never been created before. Now, if that's not set up, it usually ends up with kind of hunting and pecking and hoping the student hits a few good shots so they like what they're doing. It's just, it's not a waste of time, but it's as close to a waste of time as you can get. See, a lesson is simply, when you're left with it, has the person grown their awareness in a critical area in which they coach themselves and can see a wider context? The wider context could be, you know, not only to learn about hooking and slicing, but to learn about learning. Suppose you could take any process that we've done today about hooking and slicing and bring it into anything. Solid hit. You could bring it into sand shots. So it's learning about learning. So sometimes you can make it wide enough that it not only becomes interesting to people, but it has a person really get inspired to what might be possible. See, to me, that's a golf lesson that I would like to get started. I'd be interested in that one.
But is that a realistic golf lesson, or is this like what you hope to achieve at some point?
Oh, it's absolutely realistic. I mean, I don't find that difficult at all, because here's what I know. This isn't like a belief, okay? I know that human beings are incredible when they can create an environment for themselves that it's safe and put their attention in the area that matters. Be present in that area. Anybody can feel the face of the club or their hand. It's just that most of the time they're so freaked out about hitting a golf shot, they can't experience anything. So in a lesson, the important element is to create an environment of safety. And I tell a person, listen, for the next hour, I won't be judging you or assessing you. There's nothing you should do or shouldn't do. There's no right or wrong. I'm as interested as you are that you could discover what's going on. See, whether we like it or not, all golf teachers are environmentalists. The object is to create an environment in which remarkable discoveries can happen. And if you haven't got the environment, I don't care if it's school or golf or business, people don't learn. People learn when it's safe, and they're ready to learn because they've created their own agenda. And without that, you can't shove it into people. And believe me, we tried in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that everybody's at the same place at the same time ready to learn about, you know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, I don't know, that was boring to me. Yeah. So if we've learned one thing, it's that human beings have a remarkable capacity to learn that's mostly beaten out of them early. And it's possible to rekindle that capacity during a golf lesson or a golf school. And I find that very exciting to be around.
Sure, sure. And you talked about having their own agenda. Clearly, people come into a golf lesson with something they'd like to attain, a goal that they want to achieve. Obviously, in golf, their goal is to be, I'm sure they say, hit the ball more consistently. They want to putt better, you know.
Yeah, sure. But let's go with that one. Hit it more consistently.
Yeah.
And all right, here's my question. What do you think you'd have to learn in order to learn that? What would you have to learn in order to hit it more consistently? And then take a pause and sit back. See, a normal lesson, if you watch it and it doesn't work, goes something like this. The student comes in and does the unburdening phase. Oh, you know, I've just been hitting it terribly, and I can't play the ladies' 18-hole group, and it's just so embarrassing. I'm just rolling the ball on the ground, and I can't get in the air. Got it? Then they sit back, and they expect someone to heal them. It does someone no service at all. Not that you could anyway, to go in with all the answers, because you don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
But if at that point, you could turn the tables, so to speak, on what they expect, and simply say, what do you think we ought to do? Where should we start? What do you see? Always empowering, because people, they have amazing capacities to learn. The body has gone through several million years of evolution, unless you're a creationist. That's about 6,000, but that's still pretty long. It has all these abilities. We're like the CEO of this amazing company called our body. and we don't even know its assets. See, the body doesn't speak English. It speaks a language called awareness. And awareness, the access to it is simply being present. So if a student is not present, meaning the fact they are not experiencing directly things that are happening, if they are in their head with worry or hope or concepts or frustrations or anything, if they're in their head, they're not going to learn. I don't care how smart you are. But if they're present, in the moments they're present, that's the moments when learning happens. That's the magic. A coach's job is to create an environment that a student can be present to things they've never been present to. And that's what teaches them, not the coach.
What kind of resistance do you get because people are coming in trying to be goal-oriented and you want to take, not that you don't have goals for them,
sure,
but your goals may not align with theirs when they walk in the door.
My experience is that there's no resistance, and I'll tell you why. You have to know that people have concerns and issues and problems, all of us do, and you get it. And you, the person says, you know, I've been to everybody and I'm still coming over the top and so forth, and you get that issue, but then you got to be straight with them. And straight with them like, listen, you've been to this guy and you've been to that guy and you still have the same issue. If we do the same things you've always done and you expect things to be different, we're crazy.
Well, yeah, isn't that the definition of insanity?
That's one definition of it.
Yeah.
But I said, how about instead of relying on me as the answer, that you could experience itself, and when you leave here, you could take a huge measure of self-coaching over that and experience things that you've never known before. You know, my sense of people when they get this is they like it. They say, okay, that sounds logical to me, rather than to be dependent on the next tip coming by. To be able to marshal my own resources to do what I want. And if it's about hitting a ball longer, fine. It's about solid contact, it's great. But to know that they know that our roles are well-defined. They are responsible for their learning. Okay? In one way, it's like this. The student is 100% responsible for their learning. And I'm 100% responsible, too. We have to both be.
Mm-hmm.
Responsible means, in a wonderful way, that we are able to respond. It's not a burden. It's I'm able to respond. I'm able to make a difference. That's called being responsible. It's a great asset. And just talking straight with people. Rather than giving a pretense, it'll all work out if they simply just turn their hip to the left faster.
Fred, this has been absolutely phenomenal. I'm sorry that we couldn't get to some of the questions that we have had submitted by our listeners, but could you come back and answer those questions, please?
That's a real possibility.
And I just want to let everyone know that as we continue to develop the various parts of GolfSmarter.com, the Golfer's Mart is now open for business so that you can order either or both of Fred's books or any of the other books that's been featured in the past on Golf Smarter. As I mentioned earlier, as you'll hear in the next episode, many people feel that both of your books are must-reads and your content has been transformational, not just for golf, but in their lives as well.
And if it's been a real stinker and drove you crazy, blame Fred.
Either one of us.
Right. All right, Fred, thank you very much.
And thank you. But we're not done with Fred by any means. Part two of this conversation, just over 30 minutes more with Fred Shoemaker, will be featured next week on Golf Smarter for members only. So please go to golfsmarter.com and join today. You'll gain full access to our complete archives in addition to getting new episodes every single week. And if I can provide another little tease, here's a taste of what Fred says in part two of our conversation.
You take a swing and say, I ask you, do you feel the club head in its 540 degrees of arc? You say, no. I feel at the beginning and then I lose it. Hang in there. Just close your eyes so you can feel a little more. And after a while, you start to paint in where that club is as it goes around you. And pretty soon, as it goes around, you can also feel its opening and closing. And then you could take it from a very slow speed and move it to a little faster speed. And then pretty soon, you can feel it at a pretty good speed where the club open and closes, and you notice when you hit a ball, before you look, you can tell whether it hooks or slices. You can feel it. You know it. And then all of a sudden, you kind of get kind of cocky, and you'd say, you know, I can start hooking it and fading it when I want. That's a whole cool level there.
And that's Fred Shoemaker, part two, next week on the premium version of the Golf Smarter podcast for members only. Have you ever been to a demo day at your local course? chances are you've not been to Hagen Oaks. This weekend, April 24, 25, and 26, I don't usually go into things that are that specific in date, but more than 150 vendors will be at the 34th annual Hagen Oaks Golf Expo in Sacramento, California. So if you're anywhere on the West Coast and you want to check out new gear, you've got to come to this show. It's kind of like going to the PGA show in Orlando. Named by Golf World, Golf Digest, and Golf Range magazines as the best golf promotion in the entire country. Now, Saturday morning, I'll be recording conversations with manufacturers about the new and interesting products. And then from noon to 3, I'll be at the Fairways and Greens magazine tent, hoping that you'll stop by to say hi and enter to win a pair of Alias Footwear golf shoes. The most comfortable golf shoes I've ever worn, or a walker's dream that are closer to hiking boots than traditional golf shoes. And remember, when you join Golf Smarter for members only, not only do you receive a free box of Dixon Earth golf balls, you'll receive a free subscription to Fairways and Greens magazine. So please, stop by and introduce yourself at the tent, Fairways and Greens magazine, this Saturday, April 26, from noon to 3. Now, speaking of Dixon Earth golf balls, congratulations, Lucas Welter of Mendocino, California, and Matthew Kovaleski of Fairborn, Ohio. You two have just won a box of Dixon Earth golf balls. These are tournament-quality balls that are also the first eco-friendly golf ball. We talked a lot about them on March 17th episode with Glenn Coombe, the putting doctor. So if you're new to the show and looking for something else to listen to, please check out our conversation with Glenn that talked about putting, the Dixon Earth golf balls, and a lot more. One of my favorite parts of doing this podcast is finding and giving away prizes like we've just mentioned. But currently, we have what may be the greatest prize ever. First of all, it's a prize package. To enter, go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Enter Contest button and fill out the information so that you can be eligible to win 2 nights and 2 rounds of golf at Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course, home of the American Century Celebrity Golf Championships held each year at Lake Tahoe. Our winners and their guest will stay at the private and historic 4,000-square-foot Twin Pines Estate that sits on 2.5 acres on a private beach on Lake Tahoe. You and your guest will also get 2 rounds of golf at Edgewood Tahoe. You'll be staying there the 2 nights immediately following the Celebrity Championship on July 20th and 21st. That's our nights of stay. And you'll each get to play a round of golf with me. That's why I just said it's our rounds to play. The Twin Pines Lodge is also walking distance to great shopping and casinos on the south shore of Lake Tahoe. Transportation is not included, but we also will be giving away lots of week passes and day passes to the American Century Golf Championship. But the grand prize, valued at over $4,000, is the Stay and Play package for Monday and Tuesday, July 20 and 21, 2009. Enter now, and if you'd like to increase your chances of winning, join Golf Smarter for members only, because one winner will come from our exclusive membership and the other will come from Golf Smarter. Members are automatically entered into every drawing for members only, but they can also increase their chances of winning by entering separately again. Deadline for entry at golfsmarter.com is May 15, 2009. Good luck. In celebration of Earth Day, which is April 22nd, our closing quote is provided by Paul Winskill, a Golf Smarter member based in the Czech Republic. Paul and I have been communicating via email, and he wants to invite all Golf Smarter listeners in the UK to stop by the London Golf Show May 1st through the 3rd. He'll be representing the golf courses in the South Moravia region of the Czech Republic and would like to meet other Golf Smarter listeners. According to Paul, golf is hopping in the Czech Republic and wants to invite all of us to come and play with him. I'm in. Anyway, here's the quote he submitted for today's show. Golf is a game of two balls. The first is 1.6 inches in diameter, which is placed on the second, which is 7,900 miles in diameter. The idea is to hit the small ball, not the big one, at least not first. Next week, for members only, part two of our conversation with Fred Shoemaker. I welcome your comments, suggestions, requests, and quotes. You can find me at Fred S. Green on Skype or scroll over the feedback tab to select Hey Fred at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. delivering sound advice.